This is A Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott alongside Dennis O'Hare. Well, Dennis, as you know, Governor Deal will soon sign a $21.8 billion state budget, which includes some tax breaks and spending that he and lawmakers inserted in the final hours.
Back on Tuesday on A Closer Look, just a couple of days ago, we heard from Taifa Butler, the new chief of one of Georgia's budget think tanks, the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute. There is at least one other one, and we get that other view today from Kelly McCutcheon. He's the president of the Georgia Public Policy Foundation. He's here in our studios. Mr. McCutcheon, thanks for the time. Good to have you.
Thank you, Rose and Dennis.
Now, both your organization and Taifa Butler's do lots of objective number crunching, but they also are often viewed as leaning one way or another politically. Taifa Butler's organization often seen as leaning liberal. Your organization often seen as advocating for business interests, for instance. So I'll ask you the same question we asked them. Are you analysts first or advocates first?
Well, one thing we're very proud of, we have a 24-year record of getting our facts right. No one has ever proven us wrong on facts. So we believe if our decision makers have the facts, they'll make the right decision. So we are analysts first. But we do have a bias, and we believe sound economic principles and a fiscally conservative outlook is something that is the best way to approach many of our problems.
So given what we saw at the very tail end of the legislature with some last-minute spending proposals that got slipped into the budget and a big tax break for Mercedes-Benz at the end that came in right literally in the last couple of hours, do you share the concern that many lawmakers voiced about that, which was we don't really know the financial impact of all of this?
Well, that's absolutely right, Dennis. That is not a very good way to do business. And we have rules, of course, that certain bills have to lay on the table for a certain amount of time. Those rules, of course, can be waived. And when you get to these corporate tax subsidies, what we don't know is would these companies have made the decision to relocate to Georgia absent those subsidies? And so we are by default very skeptical of the necessity. And we believe that lowering the tax burden for all Georgians and all companies is the best way to go forward.
Well, and using that as an example, Mr. McCutcheon, do you think that regardless of how one may feel about individual pieces of last-minute spending bills, should we make it tougher then to introduce them at all? Because, like we said, no one really has a chance to really understand them. So should that process be tougher, you think?
Well, we need more transparency. We need more time. We do have some laws and rules that sometimes are not abided by. For instance, the House of Representatives televises on the internet all of their committee meetings where a lot of important decisions are made. The Senate does not. Fiscal notes are typically required for spending bills, but that information's not always available to the public. So those are some simple things we can do to make sure that the public knows what's going on. And some of these bloggers and the media can alert the legislators to sometimes unintended consequences, which can stop bad bills and improve bills before they're voted on.
Before a session begins, how much time and effort do you all put into maybe putting some calls into some lawmakers or putting calls into committee chairs, sort of get an understanding of what possibly could be introduced so you all can start doing your research as well? And if you have to come down and testify, have your data ready for a particular piece of legislation?
Well, we're focusing on that around the year. We're not allowed by law to lobby since we're
sure.
a 501c3, so we don't call, and lawmakers typically we don't respond unless they call us, but we're publishing papers, giving speeches,
but you're
using
watching
social
the media,
media
to see what's out there.
Absolutely, yeah. React to that, and we certainly have things that we'd like to propose to improve the lives of Georgians.
One area where your foundation and Taifa Butler's disagree is on the issue of school choice or school vouchers, alternate funding for education. You wrote after the session that the legislature, and these are the words in your paper, refused to consider expanding the existing school choice programs despite pent-up demand and demonstrated cost savings. And Taifa Butler, on the other hand, raised a question about the fiscal impact of those programs. And here's what she had to say on that. She said, giving parents opportunity to sort of educate their children where they want and let the money follow the child, how does that at the end of the day determine, or how does that at the end of the day undermine public schools where students who may come from low-income families don't have that option? Just wanted to get your response to that.
Well, first of all, we think every child ought to have the option to get the best education possible, not just wealthy children, or children that just happen to live in the right neighborhood of a good school. Second, these school choice programs we have in Georgia cost about half or less of what we're spending. So it's actually leaving more money in the public school system for kids that leave and go to a private school. But also, Dennis, doesn't mean you have to go to a private school. School mm-hmm. choice means public charter schools, and there are a tremendous amount of online opportunities for education that means you don't have to get out of the public school system.
But do those kids, are we going to see public schools having to meet costs with fewer dollars, and the remaining kids kind of left behind because they, even with the subsidy, couldn't afford to go to the better school?
We think low-income students ought to have a full amount of funding so they do not have to make up the difference.
We think we do that, though, in any sort of fiscally responsible way for the state?
Well, for the low-income students, that's one thing. Not every student is a low-income student. There are many middle-class families and wealthier families that can afford to pay a portion. I think if you look at it, we can do it in a way with the existing funds where we did not hurt the public schools, but we give every child a chance. I think the existing system is not working well for our low-income students. We've got to do better.
We're talking about the recent legislative session with Kelly McCutcheon, who is the president of the Georgia Public Policy Foundation. To continue this part of the conversation, are you saying that there are demonstrated cost savings to vouchers? I mean, do you have that basis for that?
Yes, it depends on the amount of money. The tuition tax credit scholarship program is a great example. We have a study on this. The average cost is around $4,000. Georgia spends an average of around $9,000 to $11,000, depending on the year. So when a child leaves the public school system, takes that $4,000, that leaves the rest of the money in the public school system, usually the local portion. So there's actually more money per student for the children that remain. And all the studies show that these school choice programs improve the public schools that are competing for those students as well. So it lifts all boats.
And so without that legislation going through, that's obviously on your loser side of the winners and losers. In talking about education, though, you write that you all are in favor of with the failing schools legislation, where the state would be able to come in and sort of take over a failing school if it was consistently failing.
Well, first of all, we think, you know, there's a limit to what testing data can tell you. But in this situation, I think most people can recognize a persistently failing school, a school that has scored so low for so many years. We do believe that the state does have a role in intervening on that behalf. What we don't think is the state taking over the school makes sense. What we want to do is bring in new management. What's happened in New Orleans is where we brought in some really innovative charter school operators, nonprofit organizations to run these schools. You've seen some really great achievement gains, and teachers are really excited about going to New Orleans now.
Well, one could argue, Mr. McCutcheon, why not make sure that school within that district has the resources it needs instead of bringing in an outside entity to sort of take it over? If a school is consistently failing, one would argue, well, what's the reason for that? And let's look at that, and then let's either revamp that or give that school resources that it needs.
Well, that's one thing that the Governor's Education Reform Commission is going to be looking at this summer and making their recommendations on our school funding formula that was created in 1989 when I graduated from high school. Very outdated.
It's a little outdated.
and that's important. But, you know, you look at these schools that are failing. There are schools that are spending a large amount of money and schools that are spending a small amount of money. I think it's not the amount of money. It's how that is spending and the management of those schools.
Now, is that directly on the school or the school district?
Well, very often it could be the school district, and I think that's a great point. If you look back over the last 10 years, we've been increasing administrative and central office personnel at almost twice the rate of the growth of students.
That's
so
a good point.
We've got to make sure more money gets to the classroom.
We've got about a minute to tackle a very complicated subject. Governor Deal and legislative leaders have said Georgia would not expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Now, with the federal government at least for the first few years, at least till 2022, assuming more than 90% of the state's cost of expanding Medicaid, is there any fiscal argument against doing that, or is it a philosophical and political one?
Well, we don't have any assurance that the federal government's going to live up to their promises.
Even an assurance, though, that they'll phase it out at the end. You can argue the other way, too.
That's right. Look, we do not think expanding Medicaid is a good idea, but we have worked for the last 2 years to promote an alternative that we believe is more fiscally responsible and would provide better care for these individuals. So doing nothing is not acceptable.
Basically for that states could get
refundable tax credits that would go right to the patients, and if that money is not used, it would go to our safety net hospitals.
But the Supreme Court may have something to say about the whole idea of tax credits.
Well, we may have a special session of the legislature if the Supreme Court strikes down that law.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. Kelly McCutcheon is the president of the Georgia Public Policy Foundation, one of the state's think tanks that looks at budgets and policy and all of those good things. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you
very
much.
McCutcheon.